Number one means you're always on top. You're on the number one.
Coming up on this week's Naked Property Investor.
It should never be about money. It should be about your passion, about your drive and what you believe in. If you don't believe in what you do, you haven't got a chance, and money comes and goes. And I'm fortunate to be in a business where I've got the balance here, that I'm doing okay for myself. But at the same time, I know that when I go to sleep at night, I sleep very well because we're doing a really good duty and I can see it in people's faces every day.
And also,
these individuals have entrepreneurial skills. You know, because they are vulnerable or because they've had difficulties in their life doesn't mean they're still not ambitious. And it's about seeing that in a person. If you can see that in a person and you're able to give them that little push, that little spark from the beginning, you can change people's lives.
I'm Evan Maindonald, CEO of Melt Property.
I'm Andrew Ward. I'm the founder of Solomon New Homes.
I'm Kavitha Vipulanda, and I'm the director and founder of Allura.
I'm Lloyd Edge from Oz Property Professionals.
I'm Sim Sekhon, MD of Legal for Landlords, and you're listening to The Naked Property Investor.
From the Property Investor Studios, welcome to The Naked Property Investor with your host, Kizzy Nkwacha.
Kizzy is the publisher of the Property Investor magazine, Money and Finance, and Business Game Changer. Kizzy is also the editor of the successful Property Investment book series and the founder of the Property Wall of Fame. Every week, Kizzy and his guests provide you with the vital tools you need to take your property business to the next level. Now, meet your host, your mentor, and the godfather of all things property, Kizzy Nkwacha.
Hello and welcome to The Naked Property Investor. My guest this week is Mario Caruso, CEO of Caradon Group. Now, let me tell you a little bit about Mario. Are you ready for this? At age 18, Mario acquired and developed his first property from his own savings. In 2009, after the recession of 2008, Mario founded Caradon Property, which specialized in helping individuals hit by the economic downturn. Using his acquired knowledge and experience as a landlord, he pioneered one of the first rent guarantee schemes in London, assuring a reliable income for landlords and acting as a guarantor for vulnerable tenants who are struggling to find accommodation. In just a few minutes, I'll be talking to Mario and exploring his secrets for property investment success. Don't go away.
My name is Chris Lang. I'm CEO of commercialpropertymadeeasy.com. And today I thought we might talk a little about negotiating. You see, everyone negotiates, and generally for most of the day. Whether it's at work or at home, we're all trying to persuade someone to adopt our point of view. And therefore, I've put together what I found to be the top seven negotiating strategies over the past 45 years. Now, this list is designed to provide you with a roadmap as you go about structuring any of your future negotiations. And so here's a quick outline of what I came up with. The first one is always set your boundaries. Next, learn how to refer to a higher authority. Thirdly, capitalize on reaching the limits. Then, how to make concessions. The fifth one is using silence strategically. And then you need to understand that negotiating is a process, not an event. And finally, appreciate that no is rarely a refusal. Anyway, given the short time available, I thought the best way for you to learn and adopt these seven key strategies would be for you to download a short ebook for free from commercialpropertymadeeasy.com/negotiate. That's commercialpropertymadeeasy.com/negotiate. And it's yours now for absolutely no charge.
I'm Lloyd Edge from Oz Property Professionals, and you are listening to The Naked Property Investor.
Thanks for dropping in. This week I'm in the studio of Mario Caruso, CEO of Caradon Group. But before we introduce Mario, I've been asked to remind you that the Property Investor is producing its annual showcase of the top 10 outstanding property specialists 2020. Now, the showcase covers all disciplines from commercial and residential developers to design, finance and property marketing. To be eligible for the award, the specialist must work in one of the following regions: the UK, Australia, or the US. For information about how to nominate yourself, a colleague, or a client for inclusion in the top 10 outstanding property specialists, email tpieditor@email.com. That email address one more time is tpieditor@email.com. Good luck. Well, job done. Mario, it's amazing to have you join me.
Pleasure to be here. Thank you.
I know I said in my introduction that you did this amazing thing at 18. And I'm just thinking that at age 18, I think I was saving up to buy a brand new PlayStation. But you were on your way to buying your first property. Two questions, Mario. First of all, why did you want to buy a property at 18? And how in God's name did you pull it off?
Well, not easy, that's the answer. But I think I always say that your path is set at birth. And my parents, they came over in the 50s. They came over as immigrants from Italy. And they wanted to go into the restaurant trade. And they came over, opened the restaurant. And they had four kids, so I'm one of four. And I think I always say this kind of funny joke that they didn't see four kids. They didn't see two boys, two girls. They saw two waiters and two waitresses. So my dad had this idea of having cheaper staff. So open a restaurant and employ your kids. Or in my case, it was free labor. So I was kind of born into business from a very, very young age. Literally, I think I was 6 or 7 when I could just about reach the kitchen sink and then used to wash the pots there. So I think it's very, very important that the work ethic is set from a very young age. And I think because my father had that kind of work ethic, very, very old school individual, he kind of pushed me into the business from a very, very young age. So I think that was my first introduction into business. And I kind of slowly made my way up in the restaurant trade, you know, through the kitchen, through the restaurant, at the same time going to work. So by the time I was 18, I had quite a good knowledge of the restaurant trade, firstly, and also property, because my father, although he was more of a restaurateur, he dabbled a little bit in property. So he would buy the occasional property now and then. So I was his labourer on the weekend as well. So at a young age, I kind of had that experience from property, learning a bit about construction, and I suppose learning, very importantly, working with people in the restaurant trade, understanding the kind of value of money, the importance of teamwork. And I was fortunate, and I suppose I was lucky, because although I was quite young, social services weren't very active in those days, you know, so I was lucky that no one actually came in and took me away as such. And although I lost a bit of my youth, I did enjoy it, and I was lucky enough to kind of stay away from kind of the, I suppose, risks associated to kind of growing up in the areas that I grew up with. Working kept me away from that, I guess, was a bit of a distraction. So yeah, the answer to the question really was, one, I was fortunate enough to be pushed into business. My mum and dad, they didn't give me any money, but they gave me something that was more valuable, which was knowledge, and pushed me into business from a very, very young age. And age 18, literally, I found a clever way of buying a property. And that was, it was kind of working with the banks. And I convinced a vendor to gift a deposit for me. Basically, the short version is, basically, you know, most people struggle with deposits when they're buying their first properties. And I convinced the vendor to do a separate loan for the deposit on his property that he was selling. So I was able to fund the whole property 100% with no money. And that was kind of one of those moments, which I've had a few in my life, which is kind of the clouds separated. And I thought, oh my God, I managed to buy a property with no money down. And it was quite a clever way. And it was down to two things, really. If you're able to buy something which is undervalued, in theory, you shouldn't have to use much of a deposit yourselves, because that deposit should be in the discount of the property that you're buying. So I was quite, I suppose, advanced for my age. I guess I saw the opportunity. I managed to kind of convince the vendor. And that was kind of my first step into the property market.
Wait, Mario, sorry, I'm just lying on the floor here, absolutely flabbergasted. You managed to persuade the vendor, the person selling you the property, to front you the deposit money to buy their property.
Yeah, and it's quite practical, because if you're trying to sell a property and you're flexible, you've got that flexibility there, then ultimately they're held a second charge on the property. So I was able to get I think it was 70% of the loan at the time from the bank. The 30% came from the vendor in as a way of a gifted deposit at the time. And that was paid on a separate loan to the vendor over a period of 5 years. So he was able to sell quickly. Okay, albeit he had to wait a bit longer for the other 30%, but it worked for him, it worked for me. And it gave me the opportunity to kind of step in onto the ladder as such. But obviously I had to fulfill the obligations of paying the mortgage and all the commitments for many years. And, you know, from there, that's where I started. Bought my first property there. It was a conversion of a shop and a flat, funny enough. I went in there and tried to use my own skills to do a renovation. I'd done a really bad job and I realised quite quickly I better learn some trades here. So for many years, I worked with many, many tradesmen, electricians, plasterers, blah, blah, blah. And it was always the kind of secret was always to try to how to add value to the property. So I would look at a two-bedroom house where there was a kind of larger upstairs section, you know, or if it was like a traditional two-bedroom Victorian house, upstairs are quite big. So I would be able to convert the old bathroom into a bedroom and create a third bedroom in that house by reconfiguring. So trying to add value to a two-bedroom house and make it into a three-bedroom, that's where I kind of started. And then I went on to some conversions. I went on to new builds and eventually on to land later on in my life. But starting off was kind of typical conversions, one-bedroom flats where I could make them into two-bedroom flats. Wherever I could see a bargain, I guess, you had to have the eye for it and take a chance, of course. But it's about adding value and adding a good, you know, ultimately having a good yield on the asset that you're acquiring.
So where does Carradine Property come into play? Because I've got a picture of you here as an 18-year-old. You've managed to successfully negotiate your first property investment deal. It becomes a property development, property management. And then somewhere along the line, you decide that you want to create your own business, Carradine Property. How did that come about?
Okay, I suppose from my kind of, I spent 20 years, as I mentioned to you earlier, I grew up in South London and around Camberwell. I spent my first 20 years around there and I had two kind of paths. I had the catering background, which was very, very important because a lot of developers, they fail because they don't have the cash flow and they rely purely on sales of properties. And if the market has a downturn and you're not selling, then you're in trouble. So I knew that it was important to have a good business with that provided cash flow. So I suppose from my 20s to my 30s, I created different businesses, catering businesses, and at the same time was acquiring properties. Up until kind of the first recession, which was the 90s, I managed to get through that recession there where the interest rates went to kind of 15%. So I felt the pain there. And then in kind of 2000, the early 2000s, I moved to Croydon, where I kind of grew the both sides of the business. I grew the development side of the business and catering. So I won a contract in my early 20s for Croydon Council for catering, this huge contract, which was to cater for 5,000 people a day. And bearing in mind, you know, I moved to Croydon actually just buying a small sandwich bar, actually, just a little sandwich bar, one staff. But I went for a huge tender, an opportunity with Croydon Council to cater for 5,000 people a day. And I was fortunate enough to win this contract in my early 20s, and I was up against some massive, massive companies. So that was a huge it gave me a kind of boost because, again, that was a cash flow business. So I was running the catering business. At the same time, I was fortunate enough also to win a contract to house asylum seekers. Working in the council for catering, you're obviously always in contact with people. And someone asked me that at that time if I had accommodation available because they had a need for asylum seekers. So that was my first kind of taste of housing people that were either vulnerable or through the kind of social sector. I think for the early kind of 4 or 5 years of 2000, between 2000 and 2008, just prior to the crash, I had created a huge kind of property empire, I would say. I had a very large portfolio as well as catering businesses as well. So I thought I was untouchable. And unfortunately, the 2008 crash came and everything that I'd worked for probably 15, 20 years of my life, I'd lost overnight. And that was a very, very difficult time because you can imagine, you know, you work all your life for something and you don't realize that everything can go. And I lost, unfortunately, the contract that I had with the council because they decided to cater in-house. I had money invested in stocks and the stock market crashed in 2008. And the banks, a bit different than they are acting today, they were kind of repossessing left, right and center. And, you know, from where I was, where I had, you know, multi-million pounds of properties, I was at a position where I couldn't even afford my mortgage, which was £400 a month. So very, very dark times. And, you know, that's kind of the test of your life you have, you know, where you're strong and you get to know a bit about yourself, or your family, people around you. And I didn't give up. I'm not a fighter. I've been a fighter. Like I said, I start with nothing. You go with nothing. I'm a believer of that in life. And it was very, very difficult because I had kids kind of 3 years of age and 5 years of age. I take them out of school. My house almost got repossessed. And I was at the end and I thought, it's the end for me. And unfortunately, you know, the banks weren't lending. You couldn't go to the banks and try and get development finance because it was a crash, as you know. So what do? And this is why I'm a great believer in fate. And I can tell you a number of stories in my life where it's kind of brought me to where I am. But one in particular, which was the birth of this business. So in 2008, 2009, around that period there, I was walking down the streets of Brixton. And this is a true story. And a friend of mine called Jeff, he was an alcoholic and he was on the street, homeless. So I just bumped into him, got talking to him straight away. He said, Mario, give me a fiver for a Guinness. So we got talking. I told him my situation, you know, I'd lost everything, property market crashed. And I just wanted to know a bit more why he ended up in the situation he was in. And he told me, you know, alcohol ruined him, he lost his family, lost his job, lost his house. And that's why he was homeless. So we got talking and I said to myself, there must be a way I can help him. How can I house this person? What can I do? And he introduced me to a trust in Camberwell called the St. Giles's Trust, who at the time, they had initiatives to house ex-offenders and vulnerable people, homeless and what have you. And by meeting this individual and kind of in connection with the trust, I was able to house this person into my own property. And the main reason was that most vulnerable people, homeless or, you know, if they have drug or alcohol misuse or whatever type of vulnerability they have, they have an issue to try and get onto the ladder. And that's, this individual did not have a deposit. He didn't have a reference or a guarantor. So all I did was I guaranteed the rent for this person and I was able to house him in my own property. And that was the kind of birth of my business where I saw or I quickly realized that, hang on a minute, there are many Jeffs in the world. And from that day there, I guess it was life changing for me because it was one, it gave me the opportunity to start again because I thought I'd kind of, you lose faith in yourself when you're successful, everything's going your way. You don't think things can turn and losing everything, you know, you lose confidence in yourself. And this small thing that I did by housing someone, it felt very rewarding to me because one, I was able to do something good for someone else. But at the same time, I knew that there was a huge need. So that's the spark. I always say in life, there's a spark or a trigger. And it wasn't monetary at the time because I think the property I housed this person in, I think I ended up getting about £50 a month more than I would normally get. But it was never about the £50. It was about how can I scale this? And that's what my life's always about. How do you scale something? Whatever you do, can you scale this? And from that individual, I started getting phone calls from many, many associations. I was getting calls from women who suffer domestic violence, drug and alcohol misuse, or people that have just been repossessed and they needed housing. And they all had the same problem. No deposit, no reference. And over a period of a few years, I started to house people in a third party landlord property. So through estate agencies, so I would go to the typical estate agent and say to them, look, I would guarantee you the rent. Can I take a property off you and, you know, legally sublet? So I was subletting properties from landlords through the agents. And that was my way of helping, you know, kind of speed the process because I wasn't able to house everybody in my own properties because I was limited. So the way to kind of fast track this was through estate agents who had already contacts with landlords. And the idea would be I would guarantee the rent And in return, I would be able to house people from different associations into the properties. And that's kind of where it started, where I've got kind of got the idea. But I didn't realise that the demand was huge. So you know, it would, like it is today, you know, you can't fulfil the demand. But I was at the time, I started in 2009. That was a recession. So most people thought I was mad starting a business in a recession. And, you know, actually it worked in my favor, because in a recession, you know, business can work for you or against you. But if you find the right business, it can work for you, I guess.
Wow. So it sounds like even from a very early age, you found a way of bringing together corporate social responsibility and commerce and making them work as a viable business model.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's challenging. It was challenging and it's still challenging today, because there is a lot of stigma around the people that we house. You may say, oh, Mario, it's really great what you do. You know, you're providing a house for homeless people, as an example. And many people walk past homeless people and think, oh, why are they in this situation? But how many people actually do something about it? Not many. And it is challenging because of, first of all, the type of people that that we're housing, the background, they come with different issues, mental health and what have you. Then you have the stigma of housing benefit as being, you know, every time you turn on the TV, you'll see a program about housing benefit scroungers and all the rest of the things that you see on TV. But the reality is different, that I'm housing people that, for example, someone may have just got repossessed because they've lost their job. I've housed someone who's ex-armed forces. And that's to give you just one example. And if you Google him, he's called Tent Man. And we housed him. He was sleeping in a tent in Croydon. And he was ex-armed forces. And you think, how can someone who's been serving the country be in that situation where he is homeless? And that is the reality. This individual went to an estate agency, asked for accommodation. And you know what they said to him? Where's your deposit? Where's your reference? Obviously, he had neither, because he was, you know, away fighting for the country for how many years. And he ended up in the park of Croydon for 6 months. And one of my staff went down and was able to help that person out of the park into one of our properties. And actually now, years later, he's actually got a job and started his life again. That's just one of many, many stories. So that is the reward for me, because in business, of course, you want to be successful. And of course, there is a monetary side. You have to make money. You have to keep the lights on as such. But it should never be about money. It should be about your passion, about your drive and what you believe in. If you don't believe in what you do, you haven't got a chance. And money comes and goes. And I'm fortunate to be in a business where I've got the balance here, that I'm doing okay for myself. But at the same time, I know that when I go to sleep at night, I sleep very well, because we're doing a really good duty and I can see it in the people's faces every day.
Well, it's clear that social responsibility and fairer housing for all plays a huge role in your work at Carradine Property and Carradine Group. But tell us a bit about the Carradine Foundation and Carradine Young Living. What do these organisations do?
Yeah, so we have a group of companies all set around social housing. Carradine Property, that is the company that has the management agreements and has all the contracts with the councils and works with probably a few hundred associations like Crisis and all the homeless companies and charities and what have you. And that's was set up in 2010. Carradine Foundation is a not-for-profit organisation that was specifically set up to provide more support for the individuals. And that was really, really important. And going back to the homeless person, providing a home is not enough. And what I mean by that is, we realized very early on that if you provided a house alone for a homeless person, there's a good chance that they'll end up back on the street. And we realized that, as me specifically, as a kind of property guy, I ended up becoming like a social worker, because you started to realize that these people actually needed more than the home. You needed to hold their hand through the whole cycle. There's so much to be done to help these people, from signposting, things like people that, for example, that can't read or write, people that need help in filling in forms, signposting to the right different organisations for support, be it mental or whatever support they would need. And if you didn't provide that support, specifically even to homeless people, there's a good chance that they'll end up back on the streets again. So the foundation was set up specifically to provide additional support, not-for-profit organisation, as I mentioned. And it does wonderful things, even at the moment. It's doing a lot with the food banks. We have a lot of tenant ambassadors. So we do, for example, Christmas time, we do Christmas parties for the homeless, for our tenants. We've got lots of ambassadors that do have different initiatives. So we have one individual who is an ex-homeless guy who does a running club for the tenants now. He's in one of our properties and he runs a running club for the tenants, which helps them on their mental health, obviously. So the foundation does a lot on to support the tenants, but I think it's a lot about outcomes. So we base everything on outcomes. So when someone comes to us today, whether they've come from referred from a charity or a different organisation, or they're straight from Stream Homeless, it's really important we assess their situation today and really monitor how they're getting on. With the idea is, how do we get back into life? How do we get back into life? How do we get back into where they would have been many years ago? And that's really, really important. So I think we delivering outcomes. Sustaining their tenancy is really, really important. And working with different parts of our company, we have Caradon Landlord Solutions, which provides advice and support for landlords and tenants on universal credit. Because universal credit, if you're not familiar with it, it's obviously big in the press at the moment. It's been a huge surge in applications, especially with COVID, what's going on. So Universal Credit is an advisory company, again, which provides support and advice for our tenants, because many tenants underclaim, they don't have the right benefits and they need that kind of advice. We have Caradon Young, which specifically provides 24-hour care for 16 to 20-year-olds. And that's more intense care, again, for kids that are very, very vulnerable. A lot of these individuals, they're kind of forgotten in society, unfortunately. And we're quite fortunate that we've got a fantastic team and support mechanism around us, of staff, I'd say, that can provide this support in these different entities. We have those few companies there. And then we have a development arm where we're able to acquire and develop in-house. So we don't really outsource anything. So we're quite unusual as a company. I would say that we do everything that a housing association does, but we don't have the badge as such because we're privately owned. We're able to acquire and develop. And we've developed over 2,000 homes over the last few years under Caradon Developments, which is great because we've got destiny in our own hands. And I've moved the business a bit away from where I started initially, which was renting properties from third-party landlords, because it wasn't sustainable, where landlords could change their mind. They may want their properties back, or they put the rent up and so on. So this wasn't good. If you're housing a homeless person and then you're having to move them again, it wasn't ideal. Hence why in 2010, when the market started to change and the bank started to lend again, I started to get back into development. And for the last kind of 10 years, my focus has been kind of having destiny in my own hands, being able to acquire, develop properties specifically for vulnerable people, low income, people that are really in need, and offer them the support to make sure they sustain their tenancy. And we've always seen our accommodation as a kind of stepping stone, because ideally we don't want we want them to get back to work. So, going backwards and forwards, the foundation provides a kind of stepping stone. We have a lot of back to work initiatives that allows individuals to start to get back into training. So we work with many different departments for education, training, mentoring. These individuals have entrepreneurial skills, because they are vulnerable, because they've had difficulties in their life, doesn't mean they're still not ambitious. And it's about seeing that in a person. If you can see that in a person and you're able to give them that little push, that little spark from the beginning, you can change people's lives in an instant. You can. But it's having that belief, having that confidence. I think that's what all these companies that I'm privileged to be part of have. They're all associated in the same way, that the end goal is actually to provide a house, a home, and support for people, but also to try and get them back into life, back into society, and to make sure they're not forgotten. And that's where I say we're quite different than many organisations, and especially because we're privately owned. It's a lot more challenging because obviously we're working on more low and affordable rents, and we're dealing with challenging behaviour. But if it was easy, everyone would do it. And I've always loved the challenge. So yeah, I'm definitely proud of what I do.
Just listening to you talk about your work, Mary, I can actually feel the passion that you're animating. It's almost tangible. I get the feeling, just listening to you, that even if you didn't have to make any money, you probably still would do what you're doing now.
You know what? It's never been about money. We need money to pay the bills, of course. But as I said to you jokingly earlier, we're all going to end up in the same place one day, okay? But it's about your legacy. Who do you want to be remembered as one day? And for me, I'm a team player. I'm all about the people. The people have made the business. And the satisfaction I get when I speak to my staff, when I'm speaking to my tenants, and to see the kind of changes that we've made in their life, there's no price for that. You could not put a price on that. You know, you can buy whatever you want to buy, but it's not the same reward as the fulfillment that you have when you've actually changed someone's life. You've got someone from this situation to that situation. And again, I'm blessed because I think from my upbringing, from where I've been and seen a lot, seen probably too much for my life, I would say, I've got more of an appreciation of things. And I think having lost a lot in my life, it kind of more of a realization and an appreciation of what life's about, and maintaining the balance, that you need to maintain the balance between, you know, of course you've got to make money, but your life, your family. And my priorities have always been the same. My family first, number one. Family, my food, my health, and my business is probably a bit further down the chain, and maybe that's not right for everybody. People want to say, you know what? You've got to make money. You've got to do this. You've got to do that. But I'm kind of a bit different than that. I'm a great believer that if you're destined to do well in life, you're going to do it. And sometimes you can keep banging that door and unfortunately you don't make it. And I'm not one that's going to keep forcing things. I think that you've got to let things happen naturally. You've got to have the passion and belief in what you do. And the most important thing is having the right people around you. And that's the secret. If people say to me, what's the secret of being an entrepreneur? What's the secret? And I always say the same thing. Me is knowing what you're good at and knowing what you're rubbish at. I know where I'm weak. Where I'm weak, I get people that are better than me. But you know what? I've got no ego. So if I know I'm weak at something, I'll be the first to put my hand up and say, give me some help because I need it. But where I'm strong, I will fight. I will push. So it's very important that you establish where your strengths are, where your weaknesses are. If you can establish that, then that's already a good point. But no ego. And I think one more very important thing is treating people with respect for me. And that's fundamental. And having to work in the restaurant trade when you're serving people, hospitality teaches you a lot. And there's no regrets because I learned working in the kitchen that you should treat everyone the same. So I should treat my cleaner no different than my FD. My FD to my MD, they should all be treated the same. And that's my ethos. My ethos in the business is to treat everyone equally. And if you speak to any of my staff, hopefully they'll say the same thing to you, that I treat them the same because we all learn from each other. You never know in life if things can change and you may need to rely on that person. So I never judge anyone either, because the housing that homeless person, I never knew my life was going to change. And I think going back to your point that the passion's always there, it's not the money. Of course, you don't want to be in difficulties, because if you're in difficulties, it's not nice when you're having to struggle. But you've got to have the right reason behind what you're doing, the right belief in what you're doing every day. When you get up in the morning, you've got to know what you're doing. There's a reason for it. And what's the outcome at the end of it? If it's just money, you'll get fed up of it. Believe me, because I've been there. You'll get fed up of it. And you've got to do it because you really enjoy it. And I'm blessed to say that I've been doing it a long time and I really love what I do.
Let's just skip ahead to, say, 50 years from now. No, let's go 100 years from now, Mario. When people are talking about you, how would you like to be remembered?
Good question. I would hope to say that people didn't see me as their boss, that they saw me as someone that was always at the same level as them, for starters. Because that's really important to me. I don't want anyone to, although you call me the CEO, whatever you want to call me, I don't see myself with that. I try and treat people the same. So that's important to me. I hope that personally, of course, for me, it's my family, my kids, they see the legacy that we've achieved in, improving that you can actually have that social responsibility, have a successful business, which you're doing well. At the same time, you are making a huge difference. And up until now, it's been the kind of the housing association and government backed kind of initiatives that have done what we've done. But we've proven that if you've got the care, you've got the hunger, you've got the ability, you can create an organization that can deliver these services quite easily, I guess. You can do it, but you've got to have that kind of the right work ethic, I guess, to be able to do that. So yeah, from a personal point of view, I think I want to be remembered as that kind of person that was always fair and with people and I'm a great believer that the team, the people make the business. And like I said, from the business point of view, I think we've proven that we can house people that are in need and kind of hopefully change the stigma that's around these people. Because for many years, homelessness, people that are vulnerable, you know, people would say, oh, it's really great what you do, but no one wants to house these people. No one wants them next door to them. So I hope that we can change the stigma. I hope that we can reduce or make a serious dent in homelessness. I think it's a big challenge. I think we can do it. And even today, you can see how quickly the government adapted with COVID, that they managed to get rid of homelessness for a short space of time. How did they do it? They've done it because they put people in hotels. They've done this. So if you really want to do something, you can do it in life. And I've got no fear. I've never had any fear. And nothing's impossible. It's just having that right mindset. If you've got the right mindset, and good people around you, I think you can achieve that.
Talking about COVID, at the moment, a lot of property investors are struggling to adapt to the uncertainty created by this pandemic. Mario, what advice would you offer real estate investors at this time?
Right here, right now, I would say it's best to sit tight, I would say, for at least 6 months. And what I mean by that is, although I'm an entrepreneur and believe that there's always an opportunity in a downturn market, because I set my business up in a downturn, I've always found opportunities. I would say if you're not cash rich or you can't take a long-term view, then I would definitely sit tight for the next 6 months, kind of battle down the hatches and see what the market does. Because I think there's going to be huge change in the market and we haven't felt it as yet. We don't really know how the market's going to react because, you know, the government's kind of backing everyone up. The furloughing and the different initiatives that are out there. So they've kind of covered up a lot of what I feel is going to happen over the next 6 months to a year. So the first point would be to look at the market, see what happens over the next 6 months. If you can afford to buy in cash, it's different, of course, because then you can take a long-term view and there'll be many bargains out there. But the challenge is knowing how low the market's going to go. So you may see something today and then say to yourself, you know what, it sounds like a bargain. Why? Because you're kind of looking back in the last 3 to 6 months of where you were assessing deals and thinking this is a great opportunity. But if that market goes even further, then it may not seem like a great deal. So you need to know where the bottom is. So for most developers, I would say if you've got the cash flow behind you, then there's going to be many opportunities if you've got cash flow behind you. If you're looking at kind of commercial stock is a very, very dangerous one at the moment. I've got lots of retail properties myself and the retail market has taken a massive hit and I don't know how long it's going to take to recover. So if you can acquire something which has a guaranteed sort of return, be it by a pre-agreement for lease or you've got a pre-agreement for sale, then you know you're covered. You can buy something knowing that you're going to sell it and you've got a guaranteed lease at the end of it. Then it's a kind of no-brainer. But if you're going to buy something on the hope that you're going to get a blue chip company in or you've got an exit that it's going to sell to market on a hope, kind of fingers crossed situation, then I would steer away from it. You know, it's about your risk appetite, I guess, and your situation financially, if you've got the cash flow behind you to sustain any changes in interest rates, any change in the market. If you've got the cash flow, then you can hold. You know, the market always comes back on itself. But if you're going to go and speculate and, you know, kind of build up huge loans and debts at the moment, I would say don't do it.
Very wise words. I've just had a note given to me saying that we've got just about time to go to the section of the show called the 30-second masterclass. Now, don't panic. What this means is that you're going to have 30 seconds or thereabouts to sum up the most important lessons our listeners should take away from this conversation. Are you game?
I am, yes.
Excellent. Okay. And the clock starts now.
Remember, failure is temporary. You've got to learn to grow from past experiences. You need to look at opportunities that are out there today and really go for them. Make sure you do things for the right reasons because you believe in what you do. And make sure whatever you do that you work with good people around you. And remember that the people make the businesses. Businesses come and go. You would always find a way to be successful, but you need to work with good people. That's the key.
Fantastic. And I think you nailed it in under 30 seconds. What a great summary. Mario, we have got so much to talk about. I've got a list of questions, an arm long, that I haven't touched on yet. Look, let's get together again in a couple of months' time and do a part two to this conversation. What do you think?
Yeah, it's cool.
Excellent. Well, up and before then, I've just got to say it's been an amazing experience talking to you, Mario. I feel so privileged to have spent some time with you, to have learned some of these incredible life stories and lessons that you've experienced. Thank you so much for sharing your insight and your wisdom on The Naked Property Investor.
No, well, it's my pleasure. No, it's an honour to be on the show. Thank you.
Well, my conversation with Mario reminds me that usually, corporate social responsibility is measured in terms of businesses improving conditions for their employees, for their shareholders, their communities, and maybe sometimes their environment. But moral responsibility goes further. This reflects the need for corporations to address fundamental ethical issues such as fairer housing, equality, protecting the vulnerable, and helping young people achieve independence, fulfill their potential, and realize personal goals. This is a lesson that successful property investors like Mario Caruso are teaching us every day. See you next week.
Number one means you're always on top. You're on the number one.